Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Hung Juries and Retrials Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 24, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Bluford v. Arkansas. This case involved a state court jury that had announced it was unanimous against guilt on charges of capital and first-degree murder, but ultimately deadlocked on a manslaughter charge. A mistrial was then declared and the jury discharged. There's no entry of a formal verdict. The question before the Supreme Court was whether the Fifth Amendment's double jeopardy clause prohibited the prosecutors from trying the defendant a second time on the capital and first-degree murder charges. In an opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held by a vote of 5-3 that the double jeopardy clause did not protect the defendant from being retried on the capital and first-degree murder charges. Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, Breyer, and Alito joined the Chief Justice's opinion. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg and Kagan. To discuss the case, we have McGregor Scott, who is a partner at Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scott.
What constitutes a final and formal jury verdict which triggers double jeopardy? The Supreme Court in Bluford v. Arkansas answered in part this question by telling us what does not constitute a final and formal verdict. By way of background, Alex Bluford was charged by the state of Arkansas with capital murder, including three lesser offenses, first-degree murder, manslaughter, and negligent homicide, involving the death of a minor child. After a few hours of deliberation, the court summoned the jury after being told that the jury was unable to reach a verdict and asked the foreperson to disclose the votes on each offense. The foreperson reported to the court that the jury was unanimous against capital and first-degree murder, obviously the two most serious charges, but was deadlocked on manslaughter and had not yet begun deliberations on negligent homicide. It's important to note that this was a verbal or oral report to the judge by the foreperson of the jury. At that point, the judge sent the jury back for further deliberations. After another 30-plus minutes of deliberations, the jury reported again that it was unable to reach a verdict. The judge declared a mistrial on all counts at that point in time. It's important to note that under Arkansas law, it's what we refer to as an acquittal first or hard transition jurisdiction. Before a jury may consider any lesser included offense in this situation, first degree murder, manslaughter, and negligent homicide being lesser included offenses of capital murder, it must first determine, quote, that the proof is insufficient to convict on the greater offense. In other words, the jury must acquit on the greater charge before the judge can accept a verdict on the lesser included offense. Under Arkansas law, the jury instructions only allowed for one of two options, either acquit the defendant on all charges or find him guilty on one. So in this circumstance, the scenario in which the jury foreperson described to the judge their unanimous against on the two most serious charges hung on the third and no deliberations yet on the fourth did not fit into either of those scenarios. The majority opinion written by Chief Justice Roberts in a 6-3 majority upheld that this was in fact a mistrial on all counts, that the jury foreperson's oral report to the court that the jury was unanimous against the two most serious charges did not constitute a final and formal verdict of the jury on those two counts. The Chief Justice in particular pointed out that the jury had gone back to conduct further deliberations after that report to the judge, that there is no way of discounting the possibility that the jury could have gone back and conducted further deliberations on those two most serious counts, but that this oral reporting was, in fact, not a final and formal verdict. The ultimate outcome of the verdict rendered by the court yesterday is that Mr. Bluford now can be retried by the state of Arkansas on all four counts, and that a second jury will consider whether this is in fact a capital murder case. The reality in practical terms for Mr. Bluford is really quite dramatic. He walks out of that trial thinking perhaps the greatest charge he now faces is manslaughter. And now yesterday, as a result of the Supreme Court's decision, he's back facing a capital murder charge. So the stakes obviously extremely high in this particular piece of litigation. I think the majority's opinion really places proper emphasis on a sort of bedrock rule of jury trials in this country, and that is that the courts place great emphasis on finality and formality. By way of example, once a verdict is rendered by a jury, a member of that jury can't come back even 5 minutes later and say, you know, gosh, I've been thinking about this, I've changed my mind. That sense of buyer's remorse is not an appropriate grounds for a reversal of a jury verdict. Once a verdict is rendered, it is final. And this concept plays into that from the opposite perspective, that the lack of finality in deliberations at the time of the oral report, the lack of formality in that there was no formal written jury verdict returned to the court, plays into that whole concept that this was neither final nor formal, and that really is the underlying premise of the majority's opinion. Justice Sotomayor wrote the dissent on behalf of two other justices, and in my opinion, did a very admirable job in writing this dissent. And her dissent is really based upon the premise of we should not exalt form over substance. And she cites to some previous Supreme Court decisions, one in particular from 1977, the Martin-Lennon case, which held that if acquittal occurs, if a jury's decision, whatever its label, represents a resolution of some or all factual elements of the offense charged. And Justice Sotomayor accepted at face value the jury four persons report to the judge that they were unanimously against the two most serious charges. I don't know that this case is really going to have great and lasting precedential value because the facts of the case do seem to be somewhat unique. It is hard to fathom that this is something that's going to come up on a regular basis where you have, in the midst of deliberations, an oral report to the judge and then the jury sent back in this context. So, interesting case, unique set of facts, not really convinced that there's a great amount of precedential value here. But what it does do is reinforce, yet again, the concept that jury verdicts must be final and they must be formal.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.